Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Did you ever come across someone who could only see things their way and never accepted that they might be wrong? Ever been hurt by someone who criticised you just because you didn't mould to their perfect vision of the world? There's a word for this tendency, and it's called narcissism. Dr. Les Carter is a psychotherapist who's something of an expert on the topic. He's written a book about it that's appropriately titled Enough About You, Let's Talk About Me. And he's got a lot of great insights into how to handle a self-absorbed person. Listen carefully because he may even be talking about one of us. Dr. Carter, welcome to Open House.
Thank you. I haven't really done a lot of interviews there in Australia, so I'm most pleased to be able to be with you.
Well, I'm glad you've made yourself available to us. Now, what is narcissism, and where does the word come from?
Well, there's the old myth of the fella who is walking through the woods, and he stopped to refresh himself in the pond and put water on his face, but as he looked at his reflection in the pond, he just became enamored with what he saw and fell deeply in love and had a yearning for that person there. And in fact, the legend goes that he just couldn't pull himself away, and so he stayed there staring at this beautiful reflection in the pond until he finally died. In fact, the legend says that a flower grew up where the man died, and that's called the Narcissus flower. Narcissism is defined as a style of personality and a style of relating where there's just a complete absorption with self. It's all about me, my preferences, my cravings, my desires, to the extent that there's just an inability to see anything beyond what self wants to see. And it can obviously be a very destructive kind of relationship because, of course, you and I know that relationships are a two-way street, and if one person's only looking in one way, and that's in a self-absorbed way, it's just not going to be something that's going to work well at all.
What made you write a book on the subject? Is it a big problem?
Well, I've written a number of books, and in fact, I do some work on anger. I've got an anger workbook and The Anger Trap, what I do is I just write about things that I see in my counseling office. I've probably over the last 28, 29 years had about 45,000 counseling sessions. And one of the things that just keeps popping up as I talk with people as they're going through difficulties is folks just struggling so much with other individuals, whether it's a spouse or a family member, who's just incapable of hearing and understanding and knowing them in ways that they would find satisfactory. And it's just something that I started getting deeper and deeper into in my counseling practice just because I saw so much of it. And, of course, I did a bunch of research, and I knew about the subject of narcissism going all the way back to my graduate school days. And finally, it's like, well, I was going to just put my own words to it and come up with my explanation for it to see if I could explain it to the common population in a way that folks could understand it and then do something with it. The book that you mentioned is about, you know, how to live with someone who has narcissistic traits and how to respond to that person and maintain your sanity with the assumption that perhaps that other individual is not going to make many adjustments, but at least you can learn how to respond to them in such a way that you don't get caught in their snares.
Now, some of the traits of narcissism may seem obvious, but maybe not. What are some common narcissistic, I guess, traits?
Well, in the book I list 8 different characteristics, and at the very top of the list is an inability to empathize. You know, one of the most important ingredients in any relationship is the willingness to slow down and try to understand life from that other person's position. Well, a narcissist just simply doesn't do that. They can't empathize. And then second on its heels is a manipulative or an exploitive style of living where they just, it's all about me, and they're going to try to maneuver so that they get what they want rather than being a servant. Third is a spirit of entitlement. Fourth is an inability to receive direction. You know, you try to talk with them, and it's like you're talking to a brick wall. Five is an insatiable need for control. Six is a superiority angle where they just have to be on top, and there's kind of a haughty kind of a spirit that goes along with it. Seven is what I refer to as an unwillingness to acknowledge reality. You know, to the narcissist, if they say something's right, well, that's the end of the discussion. And so they don't acknowledge what everybody else sees and understands. And then eight, these people do have an ability to have a good, positive, favorable public impression. So at first you may not know that that's what you're dealing with, but as you get to know them on deeper levels, then it starts showing itself more and more.
There might be people listening who are thinking, oh, that sounds like this person or that, but should we be checking our own soul as well? Are we all at risk of these tendencies?
You know, that's a great question, because it really is easy to point the finger outward and say, oh, yeah, I know some of these folks that act that way. But, you see, I start with the assumption that every one of us has a certain core selfishness. You know, in fact, in my psychology, I bring in some of my theological beliefs, and I believe in the concept of original sin. And by that, I mean that there's just something that's on the inside of us that we're born with that can veer us into the wrong direction. There's also something inside of us that can take us in the right direction. I believe that we're created in the image of God, but I think we also have the capacity to do wrong. It's what we refer to as the dual nature. And so when you think about it, a little infant that's 6 years old or 6 months old or 8 months old or 12 months old doesn't have to have lessons to be self-absorbed. Mm-hmm. We just start being that way just naturally. And as we get older, then more and more characteristics will come from that one characteristic of self-absorption. In fact, I'll even go so far as to say that every negative trait that we have in our personality can somehow or another be traced to this tendency to be consumed with self. For example, if you're too critical, that's self-absorption. If you're too impatient, there's a self-absorbed root there. If you get your feelings hurt, there's a selfishness there. If you're a procrastinator, if you're lazy, if you interrupt people, if you are a bad listener, if you are agitated, if you're worrisome, I mean, each one of those has an ingredient of self-absorption at the base of it. And so each of us has a capacity to go down this path towards narcissism. Now, the full-blown narcissistic personality has this ingredient that's just so deeply embedded that it's just a central feature. It's the identifying feature of who they are. Hopefully, those of us who are going to be a little bit more mature than that can say, well, I know that I've got the ability to be narcissistic, but I see it, I recognize it enough to where I want to come up with some other ingredients that are going to go in a much better path.
What are some, starting with the sinful nature as our starting point, which every person has, what makes a narcissistic person become the way they are from that starting point? What's the next step, I guess, in childhood? Can things influence and certain stages that aren't met, perhaps?
Well, and see, that's a really interesting question, because there's not a fixed answer to that, but there are some general tendencies that we can look at. For example, when we talk about a narcissist having a poor sense of empathy towards other individuals, very often as we look into their personal history, we find that that they themselves did not receive the strong enough sense of empathy that they needed. You know, when you have a little child, let's say that's 3 or 4 years old, it's very important for the parents to just get out and just have some floor time with the child, get in their face and laugh with them and joke and tease, and then also be there for cuddling and all the rest. But somewhere along the line in those earliest years, some of that earlier formation of a full-blown empathy may not have occurred. Or if the empathy did occur, then it may have actually occurred too much to where the child began to develop a spirit of entitlement. Hey, the world owes me something because, you see, I'm the center of the universe. And so whatever the beginning point there is, there's not that real full sense of intimacy. And then you go deeper, the narcissist is a very insecure person. And so as we take a look at some of the personal history, somewhere along the way, their sense of self-worth and self-image was not well addressed, and they didn't learn how to manage that in a very clean way. Then, in addition to that, one of the things that children need to learn is a spirit of community. You know, it's not all about you. You have your siblings or you have your playmates and your family members that you need to consider too. And so children need to learn how to have an appropriate sense of servitude, or we might use the word submission, and that's all a part of the spirit of humility that's going to be actually the opposite of all of this. And somewhere they didn't learn that correctly. And then many times we find that the narcissist had a lot of exposure to what we would call shame communication. They learn that if you do the wrong thing, then you're to be shamed. But often what they do is they learn to shame other individuals. And it's as soon as they can get into the power position, then that's the way they like to communicate. And so they think in terms of how they can put themselves in a superior position. So there's all sorts of different things along the way that can be picked up that's just not the way that it was designed to be. And I'm not suggesting that all parents have to be experts at developmental psychology, but typically people that that develop a narcissism somewhere just didn't get the right mix or blend of the appropriate kinds of messages that children need and the appropriate experiences that would cause them to learn how to factor in the feelings and needs and perspectives of other individuals.
Now, from your understanding and expertise on this topic, you've identified some different types of narcissists, the controller and the passive-aggressive. Explain that for us.
Well, typically when a person is narcissistic, you think of them as being highly controlling, which as a general rule, they are very much so. And some of these narcissists can be just kind of an in-your-face type of control. You know, they're just not at all bashful at saying what they want. Keep in mind that one of the primary ingredients for narcissism is that spirit of entitlement. And so they can have a real demanding spirit. There can be a real sense that that says, you know, I've got an agenda and my job is to make you understand what the agenda is. And so they can come across in a real overbearing kind of way. As an example, I remember speaking with one man whose wife, if he said something that was just, you know, indicating that there's a boundary, like we don't have enough money for this, or, you know, schedule-wise, that's not going to work, then she would just go into a fit. How dare you tell me no? And, you know, that was the insinuation, and would just push and push and push until she could get her way. And it's like there was just no sense that says, you know, maybe it's not all about me. And so sometimes a narcissist can come across in a very overbearing kind of way to the extent that it's just impossible to reason with them. Others, though, aren't quite that overt. Sometimes people have this narcissistic tendency, but they're going to be much more discreet and subtle in the way they do it, and so they go the route that we call passive-aggressive. They're just quietly subversive. They just are absolutely not going to be cooperative. They may tell you, sure, I'll be glad to help you, and then they don't, and they develop an entire reputation of being so unwilling to flex and blend with other individuals that finally you figure out, you know, these folks just don't consider anyone but themselves, but they do it in a much more quiet, hidden kind of way because that's their way of not having to be called on the carpet for it. So it can go either way, the real overbearing, controlling style, or it can come through in that quiet, passive, non-cooperative style. But either way you go, the individual is more or less indicating, look, it's all about me, and I'm not at all interested in trying to factor in anybody else's feelings or desires or needs.
Within that, I mean, what's the best way to respond to someone who hurts us or abuses us with their self-absorbed ways? Maybe someone at work, for example.
Well, you know, one of the tendencies that that we have that will get us in trouble, and so I'll kind of answer your question in a backwards way, what not to do. You know, sometimes we get so exasperated because the person can be so tuned into themselves that we just kind of go into a real high argumentative mode. And we might say, come on, what's wrong with you? Why do you have to keep doing this? And so what we do is we, you know, I mentioned that the narcissist is really heavily into control games. And so many people will respond with a counter control. And they get into the coulda, woulda, shouldas with the narcissist, and they try to argue and plead their case. And never is a narcissist going to come back and say, hey, that's an excellent point. I think I'm going to make my adjustment now. They just don't do that. And so when you try to figure out how to respond with a narcissist, certainly I'm very open to speaking to that person, saying, this is what makes sense to me, and here's where I think that we could work to have a coordinated effort. But if the person just continues on with their stubborn and their self-absorbed way, then what you have to do is you have to learn how to very firmly and respectfully apply consequences. I'm going to go ahead and do thus and such. If you choose not to work with me on this, that's your option, but I'm going to go ahead and follow through with this anyway. And there just needs to be a willingness that that says you're not going to get caught in the undertow of the narcissist's cravings and demands and all the rest, and you have to learn how to be true to yourself, bracing yourself, knowing that that person is probably going to come against you and say, well, this is wrong, this is no good, let me explain to you why that is, because keep in mind the narcissist is an expert at shaming other individuals, and you need to learn how to not get caught up in that and defend yourself unnecessarily. So, I mean, you have to kind of know who you are and where you're going and not let the narcissist set the pace for you, and that takes some real internal strength and inner resolve as you begin figuring out what it is that you're up against.
For those who have to deal with someone like this regularly, perhaps someone in their family they live with, what are some keys to handling these situations and these people long term?
Well, I'll give you an illustration. I had a young married couple that I talked with not long ago, and the parents of the husband just basically wanted to set the agenda for how this young couple manage their life. Okay, you need to bring up your children to do this, and you need to schedule time with us for here, and when you have time off or vacation, here's how we want you to respond to it. I mean, it was all about, driven by the mother. It was all about what the mother said, and they came in, and they were just kind of perplexed. You know, what do we do? And my response is, well, what do you want to do? And they said, well, we don't want to do all this that this person's trying to tell us to do. And my response is, well, just know that you need to go ahead and establish your boundary. When this person starts saying what you have to do, it's okay to say what your limitations are. Yes, I can work with you on this. No, I'm not willing to work with you on that. And know that when you tell the narcissist no, or you set a stipulation, or you go your own separate path, you're probably going to be labeled as a malcontent, or you're going to be labeled as somebody who's unreliable or whatever, because they do have a pretty strong judgmental spirit, and you just let them label away, and you just live in the way that you know is right. You know, one of the problems when we talk about having boundaries and assertiveness is to hold firm on what we know is best, with the realization that the other person may not care about what you think. And they may misinterpret you, but you just kind of have to stand your ground and live in a way that's most appropriate, knowing that you may not have full harmony with that individual, but you do have good character and integrity, and allow that to come from internal sources rather than from the external, which is what the narcissist is all about.
I wonder if society isn't really helping out here. We've become so individualistic. There's this obsession with shaping our identity and the culture of the celebrity. Do you think this is encouraging narcissistic tendencies?
Oh, big time. You've hit a huge nail on the head there, Aaron, because, you know, it's almost as though when somebody gets big enough to where they can, you know, command, you know, you're going to do exactly what I want you to do, and they're just so big and popular that they, you know, you have the diva kind of mentality where they can, you know, now they're big and famous so they can order people around and all. It's like, yeah, I want to be like that. Whether it's the rock star kind of person or the movie star person or the big athlete and all, and they just, you know, we almost have this adulation and worship towards them, and that's what the narcissist lives for. And we hold some people up like that as being icons, and I'm thinking, well, actually, the better portion is that humble individual who likes being kind and knows how to have a spirit of servitude, and enjoys making someone else's day go well and doesn't really need the limelight. That's the person that I want to be like. But, you know, that guy is not going to be touted in the media and all as the one to look that we should go after. And so I think we have kind of a distorted view of who to hold up in high regard and who's to be held in low regard. And I think it's just gotten more and more that way as we have more and more the culture of celebrity and things like that. Every now and then you have a Mother Teresa that comes along, and we really hold that kind of person up in high regard. But, you know, who's going to really say they want to be like that? But I'd much rather go in that direction than the direction of the guy that's just, you know, it's all about me and self-worship and all the rest. But that's the way our culture tends to direct our attention.
Well, if society's pushing us there, and even in our response to narcissists, we can be narcissistic ourselves, how can we avoid becoming that way?
Well, the key is to, first of all, maintain your empathy towards them, even if they don't have empathy in reverse. Realize that a narcissist is a hurting person. And the hurt that they're trying to put on you is really a reflection of what they're carrying around on the inside of themselves. There's a great deal of pain that they're living with, or emptiness, or something, insecurity. And the more you're able to see inside and recognize that's what's driving them, then I'm hoping that there can be a kind of a sense of compassion for them. But then second, keep in mind that one of the primary goals for a narcissist is to be in control, and so what you don't want to do is get into a counterflow of counter-control. You know, you try to control me, I'm going to try to control you right back. You're stubborn with me, I'll be stubborn too. I do believe that we can have boundaries, we can have firmness, we can have calmness, but we can do it without, you know, verbally beating the other person up or being shaming or condescending towards that person. And so it's a matter of realizing that you need to have a beginning point in your life of humility and also, along with humility, clean, healthy assertiveness and being true to yourself. But you can do that without having to be harsh or condescending towards the other individual. Keep in mind that as you do have these boundaries, the narcissist isn't going to like it, and they're not going to agree with you. And so as you do this, you're not doing it as part of a popularity contest, but you're just doing it because you're trying to have right integrity and good godly character, and that's what you're going to stand most for.
Dr. Carter, thank you so much for talking to us on Open House.
Oh, Aaron, it's been my pleasure, and I appreciate you having me, and I just wish nothing but God's blessings on you and your audience.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.